Yeah, I mean, I reflected and, you know, I kind of said a little prayer as I was running onto the field, and I was like, Mom, this is it. You know, we made it.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's interview series From Phenom to the Farm, where we are talking to former professional baseball players to reminisce about their playing days and what they learned on the journey from amateur ball to the professional ranks. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Big thanks to everyone who checked out the show in 2020. I just want to say we are 3 5-star ratings away from 100 on Apple Podcasts, so if you enjoy the show and you haven't yet, today would be a great time to tap that 5-star rating on your phone and get the show over the 100 mark. Today's guest is the first big leaguer from the continent of Africa, South African infielder Gift Ngope. Gift is currently playing in the Australian Baseball League and took some time during his mandatory quarantine upon entering the country to talk about his story. Gift talked about his record-setting debut, growing up around baseball in South Africa, his adjustment to the United States game, and how to come to terms with some self-inflicted pressure and dealing with homesickness and loss during his career. Gift is the first international signee we've had on the podcast. It was a real treat for me to hear his story. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and go check out past interviews. And like I said earlier, if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure you subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. Prospect Handbook is available for pre-order. Julio Rodriguez is on the cover. Can't wait to get my hands on mine. Anyone listening to this pod would greatly enjoy the Prospect Handbook. Also makes a great gift if you've, you know, got a gift-giving occasion coming up this spring. The BA podcast feed is also breaking down those top 10 prospects and gearing up for college baseball season. For future guest info of this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Bandujo. But for now, let's talk to Gift Ngope. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he was a 2008 international signee by the Pirates, the first big leaguer from the continent of Africa, current Melbourne Aces infielder Gift Ngope. Gift, thanks so much for joining From Phenom to the Farm.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Great to be here.
Of course. I mean, I've been looking forward to this for a while, and though we've been kind of circling the wagon on this one, really appreciate you joining. Real quick, how does it feel to be back almost playing baseball in 2020 down in the ABL?
I'm excited. You know, I've been waiting the whole year to be on the field, and I get an opportunity to be out here in the Australian Baseball League, and I have 3 more days of quarantine, and I'm back on the field, baby.
Yeah, by the time this airs, you'll have gotten some games in. So we'll be looking forward to catching in on that. But let's go all the way back before your professional career. Gift, how did you wind up playing baseball instead of like cricket or rugby?
So I ended up starting baseball. It all started with my mom moving from the village into the urban areas and finding a job with the baseball community. I got sick as a child when I was living with my grandparents in the village, and my grandmother called my mom and said, listen, your child's sick, come get him. My mom asked the people at the Rambit Mets saying, hey, can I bring my son to come live with me? And that's how I started playing baseball. I was watching, heard the bat, the sound of the bat, the gloves popping. And it kind of intrigued me, and I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting, you know? So I started throwing the ball against the wall, and the coach yelled for me, and he was like, hey, Gift, do you want to play? And I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a shot, you know? And that's how my career started in South Africa.
So you grew up in baseball more than any other kind of kid. Like you literally grew up around the game. Like that's a thing that's said often about like coaches' kids or anything, but you literally grew up surrounded by baseball.
Yeah, a lot of people say I was born on the baseball field. I mean, my baseball field was my backyard. I rolled out of bed and I was on first base. So I was very fortunate to have such a big yard, and you know, I got to experience a lot of sports as well. You know, I did play cricket in my days in South Africa. I played soccer. So, but my number one love was always baseball. You know, baseball took priority over every other sport.
What was the baseball culture then where you grew up. Like here in the U.S., many kids have access to Little League. There are travel teams are a booming business. In Latin America, baseball is one of, if not the most popular sport. But how often were you able to actually play the game, especially when you got into your teenage years?
So growing up in South Africa, we had a large baseball community. We played once a week, trained twice a week. And as I was growing up into my teenage years, the numbers of the baseball community started getting smaller and smaller. As you know, baseball is competing against three major sports in South Africa, you know, rugby, cricket, and soccer. So we started losing numbers to the other sports as, you know, kids started seeing that those sports had pathways, so they decided to go there instead of continuing to play in baseball. So as I was growing up through my teenage years, baseball started getting a little bit weaker in the competition. But, you know, I still enjoyed it and I still continued playing. And, you know, I had my goal since I was 12 years old to play in the big leagues one day.
You mentioned pathways, though, and kids picking other sports because there's a clear pathway. What for you, what when you lay out that goal of getting to the big leagues, how did you imagine yourself getting there? In the U.S., most baseball players dream of going to college or getting drafted. In Latin America, the July 2nd signing period has always been that big-time dream. What was your first goal? How are you getting to Pro Bowl?
So my first dream was when in the 97-98 All African Games at the Randburg Mets, there was a couple guys that were South African that signed pro contracts. And I got to see them play in my backyard because the Randburg Mets held the All African Games. And I was able to come watch. And, you know, a guy by the name of Ian Holness, Nicholas Dempsey, Paul Bell, Brett Willenberg, they were all pro-contracted guys. And I was like, yeah, I want to be like them. They like really good, you know. And that kind of sparked something in me. And then when I was 12, I was like, you know, this is what I want to do. So I'm going to do everything that I can. Back in South Africa, me and my best friend Robert, we watched baseball, Sunday night baseball on Mondays after school. So that kind of was like, oh, yeah, this is really cool. Like, look how many fans they are out there, you know, watching the game of baseball. I want to be there and stuff like that. So when I got to 18 years old, I kind of almost stopped believing and dreaming in, you know, being a big league player. So when I was 18, I kind of made a choice. I was like, this is kind of my last year of baseball. If I get a baseball contract or a soccer contract, whichever one comes first, I'll go play that sport.
And when did you realize, when did the Pirates at least first start talking to you? When did you realize that a baseball contract was a realistic thing to that might be happening?
2007 is when I got invited to the MLB Academy, where I got to work with a lot of MLB retired coaches at the academy. And, you know, there was a bunch of scouts and everything. And then 2008, they re-invited me, and that's when the Pittsburgh Pirates saw me and they were like, listen, hey, we want to give you an opportunity to become a professional baseball player.
At the time you signed, how much did it mean to you to be the first Black South African to sign a pro baseball contract? Did that register at all for you, the importance of that?
No, you know, the importance of it didn't register to me, you know, being the first Black guy to sign a baseball contract. But for me, it was a step in the door in the right direction to where I want to be, you know. So that's the mentality I went with. It's like, hey, here's the opportunity to take it. Let's run with it and let's do something with it, you know.
What was the longest you'd been away from home before you signed?
The longest before I signed was probably a month that I went to the Italian camp. I mean, I was gone, you know, throughout the year at times, but the longest is only like a month. You know, I had 2 weeks here where I went to Taiwan to represent the national team and stuff like that. But yeah, a month was the longest. And then now my first year playing professional baseball, I was away from home for 8 months. So that was the longest I've been away from home at the time.
So the Pirates fly you into Florida. They stick you in the GCL, 47 games playing on the cloverleaf fields and like the gross humidity of Florida. What was your first impression of pro ball? Did you feel good, overwhelmed, a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. I was excited to, you know, be on the field. You know, you had some pretty nice fields that you get to play on. GCI was hot. It's, you know, we
Florida is gross.
Yeah, we call it the Gulf Roast League. I mean, it's hot. I mean, you're playing in the middle of the day after working out from 8 o'clock in the morning and then to 12, and then you have a short little break, lunch break, catch a breath kind of thing, and then you have to be out on the field at 1 o'clock playing a game. So, I mean, it wasn't easy. At first, you know, obviously we started with spring training, and, you know, coming from South Africa where we played once a week and we trained twice a week, now I'm playing games every single day and practicing, you know, every single day as well. So that was also another transition that I had to, you know, get through. And I couldn't wait for the season to start. And then the season eventually started in June, I think is when the season starts in the GCL. And I was excited. By the time August rolled around, I was so beat mentally and physically that I could not, you know, like function at all. You know, I just had to push through and finish the year, but I was tired, honestly, you know. So going back that off season, I had to make some adjustments and prepare my body to play, you know, 60, 80 games the following year.
Does it just take that first off season to adjust to that, or does it take you a couple years in pro baseball to be able to physically and mentally get through that season long grind? Because as you as you get up the ladder, the season gets longer.
Yeah, you know, as you get up the ladder, the season gets longer. But you know, for American guys, it's a little bit easier because you guys are used to playing, you know, three games, maybe four games a week. You know, for a guy like me and other countries, you know, people from other countries who play once a week or twice a week, you know, and going over there to America to play pro ball and having to make that adjustment, it takes a little bit longer. You know, it took me, I think, after my 2012 season that I eventually got used to playing 100 games a year.
And that's 3 years after you signed too. So that's quite a bit. With your adjustment to American baseball, there wasn't a language barrier like there is with some guys who come from the Latin American countries. But is there any baseball slang that's used in South Africa that isn't in the U.S. or vice versa? Or does baseball just translate seamlessly wherever you go?
I mean, there's different slang. I mean, when I got to America, I was still saying my ball, you know, instead of calling, in America, they say, I got it, you know, and in South Africa, we say my ball. And when I said that, I remember my teammate, Wes Freeman, I was playing second base, ball was hit between us, and I was running backwards, and I got to the ball, and I'm like, my ball, and I caught it, and then he came behind me, and he said, if you say my ball ever again, I will truck you. And I was like, wow, this guy. you know, they kind of stopped me from saying my ball because they wanted us to say I got it because my ball sounds like you. And you know, there's a lot of confusion that could happen, and then we end up running into each other. So that's how, you know, I kind of got rid of that slang of saying my ball instead of, you know, I got it.
How did you think once you were around other professional baseball players, probably, I mean, the highest caliber baseball that you had been around at that point, how did you think you stacked up to these guys, to these other professionals, and how did you think things looked for you as far as getting to the big leagues or going up the ladder? Were you still, you know, pretty confident?
Yeah, I was pretty confident. You know, early on in my career where, you know, coming from South Africa and matching up against these guys, I saw the different talents. You know, this guy is better than you in this, or this guy is better than you in that, and you're better than him in this. So, you know, what I brought to the table, you know, helped the team win, you know, and I got better with the guys. And I'm like, okay, this guy's better than me in this. You know, I got to pick up my game in that. So it kind of got me going, you know, got me to get better in my game as well. So we helped each other in our careers. That was the most important thing throughout my career, is helping one another as we went.
With being in a different country, being overseas essentially for you, overseas from home, is there any cure for homesickness? Like, has that gotten better the longer you've been in the United States or been playing baseball? Or is it still something that is always extremely difficult to deal with for you or any other, you know, foreign-born player?
I mean, it is difficult. I mean, you know, you kind of get better as time goes, but you still now and again feel homesick here and there. You know, especially in the Groundhog Month, they say, in like June, July, where you're tired and you know you've been doing the same thing since mid-Feb. You know, since when you got into the country, you got there before spring training, and then you're doing spring training, and then, you know, you start your season off, and then you kind of get that period where you know it's just, you just got to grind through it, and at that point you wish you could just have a little vacation or something, you know, and see family. Luckily, with technology improving over the years, we're able to, you know, FaceTime and Skype and stuff like that, so it became a little bit easier.
Something, your first full pro season, you did the GCL. Your second year, when you're 20, they send you out to short season. And this is something that I kind of want to harp on, since it seems that short season is kind of going, you know, short season is going by the wayside, will not be a thing aside from the complex leagues anymore. You get 64 games in state college. The stats probably aren't your best, your fondest memories there. But what did that 64 games do for you as far as preparing you to eventually, the next year, I think you get hurt. You play only a few games in West Virginia, but to prepare you for a full season in Bradenton in 2012, do you think you could have gotten through that season in Bradenton without those 64 games in state college, essentially your first time away from the complex?
I mean, the 64 game in state college kind of was like a wake-up call with the way I did. Obviously, the numbers weren't really the best. And it was like, yeah, listen, if you want to play this game and you want to stick around, you got to do a lot better than what you just did, you know. So it was a wake-up call for me. And, you know, other people, I feel, may need this short season. And then there's other people that don't need it, you know. For me, I made adjustments every single year that I played. So I feel like, you know, if I skipped the short season league, I would have been okay to play the low A season. But at the same time, it's also a learning curve that you go through, you know, playing those 64 games, what you can and cannot do. And it's also the first time you play under lights as well. So that's also something that you have to make an adjustment to, and your body needs to get used to as well.
With that first full season in Bradenton, you're 22 years old. You hit 232. It's a tough league. It's certainly a pitcher's league. You had gone into that season barely having played over 100 games in your career, and you play 124. At the end of that season, the next year, you wind up on the Pirates top 30 prospect list. You've impressed with your defense. After getting through a full season in high A, you've now got, you know, over 200 professional games under your belt. Do you have any sort of sense of what your timeline is to get to the big leagues, and what kind of player that you think you can be when you hit your full potential?
I knew that I could, you know, get to the big leagues, and was hoping to be in the big leagues in the next 3 years after my high A season. But I knew that I also had a lot of work to be done. You know, there's still a lot of things that I still had to make adjustments with, especially with breaking balls. I had gotten a lot of breaking balls in my high A year. Low A, I had a good year before I broke my hand, and I was just ready to hit the fastball. I was aggressive, and then when I got to high A, kind of like, you know, they pitched backwards a little bit, the teams that we played. And it kind of was like, you know, another adjustment that I had to make in my career. So
how do you go about making the adjust? Is dealing with breaking ball, is that all mental? Because I think it's easy to be the guy when you're watching a game on TV being like, hey, why are you swinging at that ball in the dirt? What kind of work goes into to improving pitch selection. Is that all just reps, or is there some sort of conscious work you can do to work on that?
I mean, there's conscious work that you can do. Like, for me, it was, you know, my where I'm looking for the pitch. You know, I was a low ball hitter, so anything down for me was my bread and butter. But then, you know, once I started throwing that slider down and away, it became hard for me to lay off that pitch. But my sights were down at the bottom of the zone. Now that I've moved my eyesight, you know, up in the zone, I'm looking for something to hit up in the zone. Now I'm starting to spit on the slider down and away. So that was a little bit of adjustment. And I only learned that now, later in my career, and not when I was, in, you know, 22, 23 years old. You know, I had to go literally change the way my mindset was in the plate, in my approach, in order for me to be a better hitter now than I was when I was playing in the Pirates organization, should I say.
With how much work you're having to put into your hitting at that point, and how much, you know, you certainly struggled more than you struggled in the field. You were lauded. You've always been regarded as an excellent defender, capable of playing big league shortstop, which is a very valuable thing. When you're so good at one thing, but having to put so much work to try to bring the other up to speed, does it make you not like hitting as much? Like, does that make sense? Does it bring in any sort of frustration of, if I, you know, I'm so good at this one thing, I wish I could just be on par with the other?
Yeah, I mean, I did wish I was on par with my, you know, with my fielding. You know, fielding for me was second nature. And not to make excuses or anything, but, you know, coming from South Africa and having such little games and not having the kind of preparation to play in a professional atmosphere, you know, that kind of was a struggle, because I was playing catch up the whole time, you know, like I was still catching up to everything, like the heartbreaking sliders or the way they pitch you, or, you know, what you're trying to do at the plate, your approach and everything like that. So that was kind of adjustment for me. You know, I was just catching up the whole time, where my defense was so much advanced and it was so much easier to make adjustments for me during fielding, that it just it just was so much easier for me to do that. And a lot of people were like, take the same mentality when you're fielding to hitting, you know. And like for hitting, I feel like I was so dead red on fastball that I thought every single pitch was a fastball, and I would swing like it was a fastball, and, you know, it was a changeup or a slide, or, you know, down in the dirt or something. So I ended up having so much strikeouts throughout the year. And I honestly tried to, like, cut the strikeouts down, but, you know, until I changed my approach, that's when the strikeouts were, you know, became less.
Another adjustment you had to make is living the minor league lifestyle, which, like, you didn't have a huge bonus, your paychecks weren't massive, and then living that lifestyle in a different country, like, you know, like I said earlier, no language barrier, still a different country. How long did it take you to adjust to the long road trips and you know, living in small apartments and the whole everything that goes into living in the minor leagues?
It's tough, bro. Like, it's really tough. Like, what minor leaguers go through, what I went through at the time, living off the paycheck that you got, it was not enough, you know. And, you know, you have roommates that you live with, you know, one of you ends up on the couch, so you can at least save some money amongst each other, you know. So road trips are tough. You know, especially in the Sally League, where you had 20-hour bus rides, and then you had to play the next day. You got there like early in the morning at 5 o'clock, and the coach is like, "We'll report at 2 o'clock for a little bit of training, and then we're gonna play the game." So, you know, minor leagues is really tough to get through, but, you know, when you get through it and you get to the major leagues, it makes it that much more worth it, you know.
Yeah, what was your diet like, especially in the low minor leagues, as a professional athlete, someone who I would imagine it was tough to keep on weight playing in the heat and playing those long years, especially early in your career when you weren't prepped for that kind of fatigue?
I mean, I was much of a diet guy, so I literally ate anything and everything. as long as I was putting food in my mouth, getting 3 meals a day, I was happy. You know, it wasn't like luxurious meals or anything like that, but I'd make sure at least I have like 3 meals. I mean, you get 2 meals at the field where you make like a sandwich or something like that, and then you eat, you know, breakfast, like cereal, or you get something on your way to the field or something like that, you know. And then you get dinner after the game, so, you know, you're able to get your food. I didn't really lose much weight during the season. I was able to maintain my weight. I don't know how, but I did it. But, I mean, it was tough.
The chicken tenders from the concession stand probably helped. I feel like the food at minor league ballparks is made for keeping weight on. It might not be the weight you want, but it'll stay on.
It will stay on. You know, I kept the calories after the game. You know, that burger after the game certainly helped me, you know, get through to the next day.
Does it hold merit, the stereotype that, like, America is just covered in fast food, as someone who is not born here?
I mean, there is a lot of fast food, and it's easy to get fast food. And it's not, you know, it's not really like expensive to get fast food. So, you know, America is all about the hustle and bustle. And I feel like people don't have time to, you know, get home and make a proper meal, you know. So it's just easier to be like, okay, you know what, hey, been a long day, let me just get a pizza, you know. So it's just that easy. And just fast food is just around the corner.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. So you finish up that first year in Bradenton. Like I said, you make the Baseball America's Pirates top 30. You know, you're regarded as a future big league defender. You make the jump to Double A the next year. The High A to Double A jump is difficult for anyone. It's kind of regarded as the most difficult jump in the minor leagues, and second only to the jump from, you know, actually to the big leagues. But I would imagine your first year in Double A was probably one of the more difficult of your life. 77 games in your first into your, you know, your Double A season, you leave to attend your mother's funeral. How did you even manage to come back and, you know, actually play well when you returned to Bradenton a month later? What, you know, that entire experience, what did that mean to you?
It was, you know, a different experience in Double A. I mean, regardless of the numbers that I had, the first month of the season, I feel like I did well, but I was just unfortunate because I was just hitting them straight at players. You know, if those had to fall, now my numbers look a little bit different, you know. So, and then the second month, I kind of struggled. I couldn't hit anything, you know. I was still having a bunch of breaking balls thrown at me at that time. So, you know, trying to adjust or you know, for breaking balls, and then now you're getting beaten by fastballs, and like it was just not happening for me that year. And at the same time, my mother was in the hospital, so I was kind of like, my mind was back home and not at the field at that time. So I was able to leave. The Pirates granted me some leave to go home and be with my mom at the time. I flew in, got to spend 5 days with her before she passed. And the funeral came like a week and a half later. You know, we had the funeral and everything, and then I was able to kind of get my mindset right. I thought about quitting at the time when I buried my mom, and thought about, you know, my family needs me to stay home right now and be the provider for them, since my mom is not around anymore and she was our, you know, our everything.
And you have a little brother, correct?
Yeah, I have a little brother. I have an older brother too. His name is Christopher. He was just out of high school and just starting his job at the time when my mom passed. So, you know, he wasn't making that much money for the family to be like, okay, for me to be like, okay, you know what, I can leave you guys and go continue chasing my career. So it was a difficult decision for me. And, you know, my friends and family were like, no, don't stop. This is what you always wanted to do, and mom wouldn't want you to stop. So go back out there and you know, do your job. So I was able to, you know, change my mindset and be ready to attack on the field. So I got back to high A and had a tremendous year.
You did. You added 60 points to your batting average from the previous year in high A. Your on base percentage got over, it clocked in at 424. It was an excellent end of the year, especially considering the circumstances. 2014, you go back to double A Altoona, you hit a little bit better. 2015, you're back in Altoona, you hit better, you get to call to triple A, you're playing big league caliber shortstop. When's the first time that you think there's a realistic chance that, like, you could get the call, that you're actually knocking on the door?
So yeah, the year 2015, that I had in double A, and then got called up to triple A, and then I started the first 2-3 weeks in double A, you know, just hitting balls. And I was like, you know what, if I keep going in this rate, I might just get a call up in September. So you never know. I'm playing good defense. I've been playing good defense all my life. So, you know, the bat's finally coming around. I have high hopes that, you know, I might just get a big league call up in September. And then I ruptured my oblique. I pulled my oblique that year. So then, you know, that kind of sit me back.
So you go back to Indianapolis in 2016. Were you still reeling from that injury a little bit? Was that still affecting you?
No, I was all good from that injury. And then obviously the pressure to get to the big leagues as quick as possible, you know, when I went back to the Triple A Indianapolis, that kind of took effect on my play. I mean, I was pushing so hard. I was trying everything. I was trying to do more than I can. And, you know, obviously it didn't happen that year for me either. So, I mean, there's things that you go through as a baseball player, just overthinking things and putting pressure on yourself. And, you know, and it's human nature that we do these kind of things, you know, and until we are told different and until we experience that feeling of putting that much pressure and then eventually saying, you know what, I'm done with it and I'm just going to go out there and play my game and have fun, is when you actually, like, excel in the game.
What was the final straw in you deciding to drop switch hitting?
The final straw, you know, it was like I saw my team in double A, and I was like, these guys are just, double A, triple A. I'm like, these guys are just getting pitched a little bit different than me, you know? And I feel like I can make adjustments better right-handed than I was when I was switch hitting, you know? And my numbers at the time, righty versus lefty, my numbers were a little bit different. As my career was going, my left-handed was getting better than my right-handed, but I was facing more right-handed pitching at the time. So I was like, you know what, let me give myself a chance. I've done this for, 6 years, I think it was, that I switched hit for. And my seventh year, I went in there and I told them, like, listen, I'm done switch hitting and I just want to go all righty. This is my last year of my contract. And I think I can do it. I can do it switch going righty only.
What were those first few ABs right-handed against a right-handed pitcher, seeing a righty slider or a righty curveball?
it was knee buckling. But
how long does that adjustment take to where that starts, where the visual starts feeling normal?
I mean, that's just another adjustment. It's another hurdle that I had to go through my whole career. You know, like my whole career, I feel like I was just making adjustments and I was playing catch up the whole time, you know? So it was okay, because now I started making adjustments, being like, okay, all right, this is how they're going to pitch me. And I started, you know, looking for fastballs in, because they were two-seaming everything inside. And I was like, well, you know, if they throw it inside, I'm just going to hit it inside. My hands are quick enough to get it, you know, to the pitch inside. And then, you know, as it went, I started making a little bit more adjustments. I'm not chasing the slider as much, but, you know, trying to see the pitch and seeing the slider out of the hand, especially a guy throwing 98 and you trying to get ready for 98 and then the guy, you know, drops in a slider. You know, baseball is just a game of adjustments and a game of inches.
So in the off season, in the 2016 off season, you get added to the 40-man roster. What was getting that call like, and what did that do for your confidence and your hopes for spring training 2017?
Getting that call was the best news that I received, because that meant I was one step closer to making my dreams come true. I'm a phone call away now. They don't have to make, a bunch of changes and adding me onto the 40 man to get the call up or anything like that. Now I'm on the 40 man. If something happens and there's an opportunity for me, I could be the next guy to be called up. Going into spring training 2017, I think there was an opportunity for me to make the team. I think we didn't have a second baseman at the time, so I went in there being like, "Listen, this is your opportunity. This is your spot to take. You're gonna go out there and show them that you can play this game and just go mash balls in spring training." And that's what I did.
They send you to Altoona or to Indianapolis to start the year, but you're not in Indianapolis too long. Walk me through the call.
So, yeah, I get sent down to AAA. I'm a little mad at the time, because I'm like, I felt like I did a good job in spring training to break into the big leagues, the big league team at the time. But I was like, you know what? They want me to prove that I can do it, on a consistent basis, because obviously they're looking for consistency. And so I went down to AAA, got to work, did my thing, and we're in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. My friend Dovydas Neverauskas from Lithuania, who's the first born Lithuanian to play in the big leagues, he got a call the day before. And so the coach called us over into a group, and he was like, "Listen, yesterday we called the European guy, and today they want the African guy. So congratulations, gift, you're going to the big leagues." So that's how I got my call up. Packed my bags, got ready to go, and my flight got canceled. I'm like,
Oh
"Dang,
man.
this cannot be happening," So yeah, the lady was like, "Yeah, it's gonna take about 2 3 hours. So that means I missed my connection flight to Pittsburgh." So I'm like, "Well, I'm doomed," So I called my coach. He's like, "No, get back to the hotel. Let's reassess the situation, and then we'll let you know if you're gonna get back to the big leagues or not." I'm like, "Man, I called my whole family and my friends and family that I'm going to the big leagues, and I'm not even gonna, get there," So, what I watched the whole Pirates game that day with my friends. The game was called off in Pawtucket, and later on in the evening, I got a call from my coach, and he was like, "Hey, I need you to take a deep breath in and out." So, "All right, coach, just give it to me, just give me the news." And then he was like, "Listen, you have a flight early on in the morning, 6 o'clock. You're going to the big leagues, kid." So I was excited. I didn't sleep that whole day.
You basically got called up twice.
Yeah, I mean, I got called up twice. I was really fortunate to get called up twice, because these players had told me, "Hey, listen, gift, when they reassess, you might not get back up into the big leagues." It happened to one of my guys when I was playing with them, along my career. And I was like, "Wow, you got to tell me such bad news. Like, I don't want to hear that." So, I was fortunate enough to get another call up to the big leagues. Didn't sleep that whole time, calling friends and family and telling them, "Hey, I'm going back to the big leagues. I'll be leaving at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to get to Pittsburgh," and stuff like that. I get to Pittsburgh, and they tell me, "Just stay in the hotel. We haven't made the transactions yet to get you in the big league locker room yet. So just wait for us to call you." I'm like, "Oh man, now I'm gonna get stuck in the hotel. I'm not gonna, I'm just not gonna make my big league debut." Eventually, get the call, and I go to the locker room, put my stuff down. The cameras are on me. I got like, eight reporters, asking me questions about being here right now at this moment. I get out on the field, my heart's beating like 1,000 beats per minute, and everything is just rapid fire. Like ground balls are kind of, you know, getting on me a little bit, and I had to like stop for a moment and be like, "Gift, like, listen, you're here, you made it, and everything else is just a bonus right now. You're here, you made it, you're on a big league field, about to be in a big league game. Just relax and go play the game, you know." So I was able to calm myself down, and then, you know, sitting in the dugout, talking to David Freese at the time, and, you know, David Freese obviously, you know, has a World Series ring, MVP that year with the Cardinals, 2012. So, you know, good guy to talk to, good guy to pick his brain. So I'm sitting there talking to him, and I'm like, "Listen, how do we go about doing this? I haven't had that much National League experience, so now I'm in the big leagues, and I've got to be prepared to come on at any time." And, you know, he's helping me along. And then my coach, Tom Prince, who was the bench coach that year, he was like, "Gift, you're in." And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, now grab my glove and, you know, I run out there on the field. Cervelli comes over and checks my heartbeat. And my heartbeat was through the roof at the time because I was so nervous. I was excited. There was a lot of emotions going through me and stuff like that. And then Jay Hay checks my heartbeat as well. And they're both laughing at me and being like, you know, just enjoy it. You know, this is what we live for right now. So this is the moment that we've been dreaming of since we were kids. So just go out and have fun.
When you're in the field, are you able to think about, because like baseball is a lot, there's a lot of downtime. It's really mental. You have to think about, what are you doing if the ball's hit to you? You know, in the big leagues, there's a lot of positioning and stuff like that. Are you able to think about any of that? Or is it just all the gravity of the moment just kind of crushing you?
I mean, at the moment, I wasn't trying to think about a whole lot. But at the same time, I'm thinking about not messing up, because, you know, you get told a lot of stories that you get one chance, you know, in the big leagues. And if you mess up that chance, you might not get it ever again, you know. So at that point, I'm just like, "Gift, if the balls hit you, just make sure you get an out. No matter where it is, just make sure you get an out," you know. So that was my whole thought process, you know, being up there in the field. And then, you know, everything just kind of took over and was like, you know what, just play the game. Let's find a way to help the team. And that's the only way you're going to be able to stay here. So that was on the field mentality. And then I got on deck circle, and I look over and I'm facing John Lester, and I'm like, "Oh man, this is not a gimme out here. You know, they're making me work for my debut." I got on the plate, got in the box, first pitch ball. I'm like, "Okay, all right, we got this. You know, we got this. We're doing good." Second pitch ball. I'm like, "Yes, 2-0 count. Should we go for a home run or should we just, you know, get a..."
Swing out of your shoes.
Swing out of my shoes, you know. I don't have anything to lose, you know. But I'm like, nah. Let's not do that. Let's just go up there, hit a single, and, you know, just stick to your approach. I get a fastball 2-0 right down the middle, foul it off late. I'm like, "Man, you messed it up. Like, you couldn't even had a better pitch to hit. If you just told yourself to hit a home run, you would have launched that one." Anyways, breathe. Get back in the box, 2-1. He throws a pitch just a bit off outside the corner, ball 3. I'm like, "All right, should we go for a home run or should we go, you know, just go for a single?" I'm like, "Gift, stick to your approach. Nice and easy. See the ball, hit ball. Let's just get on the board and everything else is history." You know, delivers a 3-1 pitch right down the middle. I was able to put a good swing on it, got good barrel. Hit a single up the middle, ran to first, came around first base, back to first base. And then, you know, my coach KB was out there. And, you know, KB has been with me through the minor league system for that whole time. You know, he helped me a lot and been there for me and everything. And he hugged me and said, "Your mom will be so proud." And at that moment, I almost cried on the field. And I had to hold back my tears.
I was going to ask, that day, did you get a chance to kind of reflect on on what that would have meant to your mom and, growing up around her in that, on the baseball field.
Yeah, I mean, I reflected and, I kind of said a little prayer as I was running onto the field, and I was like, "Mom, this is it. We made it. This is the moment that I've been dreaming of since I was a kid, and the moment is here. We are living this moment right now. So, here it is. I hope I made you proud, and I hope you're smiling in heaven,
Well, you broke barriers with being called up, the first player from the continent of Africa being called up. And you also broke barriers. I think you're the first person on this podcast who got a hit in their first big league at bat. And I'm pretty sure, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I think like every other guy we've had on this podcast actually struck out in their first big league at bat. I know the last few we've had on struck out in their first big league at bat. So that's a big thing for you. You can carry that. You can take that with you forever. How many media requests did you receive just over the course of 2017 after you got the call between US baseball media and media back home?
So the next day, I believe we had a day off, and my phone did not stop ringing that whole entire day. I think I had six, seven interviews that I did that day on my day off. So I had a lot of requests from, media from USA, media from South Africa, and within those 2, 3 days of my big league debut, was just being on the phone or talking to media the whole time. And yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot.
Has that stopped really in the past few years? And I know there's been, I know you had posted people, have used your likeness for a film that you didn't authorize. And has the intrigue around your story, quelled at all? Or are you still dealing with constant, people messaging on WhatsApp and asking for podcast interviews and stuff like that?
It has slowed down a little bit, as when you make it to the top, everybody wants a piece. When you're not over there, then everybody's kind of like, "Oh yeah, okay, now it's okay." But I do get phone calls and requests about doing interviews, and I'm here to tell my story, and hopefully it touches someone else and inspires somebody else out there. So, I'm always willing to talk and tell my story, because the odds of me making it to the big leagues were against me by a lot. If you had to bet on me to make the big leagues, you probably would have made a lot of money. That's how much like the odds were against me.
Well, you made it, and you're up for 28 games in 2017. Besides, what's the most difficult adjustment to the big leagues? Besides just, better pitching, better, stiffer competition. What's the biggest thing to adjust as a young player trying to stick around?
The biggest adjustment is obviously, the pitching aspect of being in the big leagues. Those guys over there, you're facing the best of the best, and they're throwing everything for a strike, whether it be a slider, fastball, curveball, changeup, everything's a strike, and then you have to be so disciplined at the plate and have an approach that you stick to. Whether you're looking away or looking in, but you got to stay, hard-headed to that approach. And that's like the biggest adjustments that you got to make, knowing what you're looking for and going up there and not missing that pitch. You don't get a lot of pitches that you can hit in the big leagues. So you got to make those ones that you get count.
You play out that 2017 season with the Pirates, and then were you surprised when the Blue Jays acquired you? Is it weird to not be in the only organization you've ever been in?
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to get a phone call at the time, because I played, I got sent down from Pittsburgh, and then I went down to AAA, struggled for the first 2 weeks. I was still kind of like mentally upset about getting sent down and everything like that. So, laced up, got ready, got to work. Did well in August, and I thought I did good enough to get called back up. and I didn't get called back up. So then had my off season. I was at home, and I got a phone call from, you know, from the player development GM guy at the Pirates, and I was like, this is either going to go one way or the other. I'm either getting released from the Pirates or something else is happening, you know. I answered the call, and he was like, listen, you're no longer a Pirate. We just traded you to the Blue Jays. And I was like, well, thank you very much for everything and that the Pirates have given me, you know. I'm truly fortunate and blessed to have 9 years with one team, and they gave me every single opportunity in order to get to the big leagues. So I get, you know, get traded to the Blue Jays, and going over there was you know, an adjustment for me, because now I'm getting to, I have to learn new people in, you know, in the Blue Jays, the staff, the players, and everything. So yeah, it was a bit of adjustment, but you know, it was also kind of nice to kind of like get a different feel of the atmosphere from a different team.
You've been in two organizations since the Pirates. Does going to a new organization, do you get any other instruction? Do they tell you to do anything differently, or is it just, hey, you do you, and hopefully you'll have an opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, some organizations, you know, may want to change something about you, but all in all, I mean, the teams know what they're getting, and they just tell you to go out there and do your thing. And if there's an opportunity somewhere, you'll be called up.
You get some more big league time with the Blue Jays. You get 13 games in 2018. They end up releasing you that August. The next year, you spend partly with the Phillies, and then a month back with the Pirates. What was the return to the Pirates like? What was the you had been released by the Phillies a week prior? How did coming back to the Pirates feel? Did you feel like it was a real opportunity, or did you think it was probably only going to be for that month or so?
No, I felt like it was a real opportunity for me. You know, they called me, they sent me down to Altoona, and they said if I do well on Altoona, I'll get an opportunity to be called up to AAA and stuff like that. So, you know, I signed back with the Pirates. I had a great reception from the Altoona fans, because I spent 3 years over there, and they loved everything that I did on the field and off the field for Altoona. So, and there's some great fans out there, you know, in Altoona. So it was a good welcome back from them, and you know, I did what I could, and you know, God, I didn't get as much playing time as I wish I would have had, but you know, being out there and looking at my role, being there was more about helping the youngsters than, you know, me trying to, you know, get into a confrontation with the coach about playing time and stuff like that.
And in this past year, you didn't have any, there were no opportunities. This was obviously a weird year for baseball, but the past, you know, for this season right now, you're quarantining to play in the ABL, and you've played in the ABL the last two winters. What's the environment like compared to in the ABL, compared to like an MILB season, compared to AA or AAA?
So the difference over here is, like, you know, you don't have to worry about your stats. Everybody's out there to play baseball and try win for their team, you know, as opposed to MLB, everybody's worried about their numbers and worried about getting called up, worried about the guy behind them, worried about the guy in front of them, how they doing, what are they doing? And, you know, there's just so much pressure that's in the minor leagues, compared to where you come here, out here in Australia, where, you know, the guys work for a living and they play baseball for fun. You know, it's like a semi-pro baseball. I'll compare it to like a high A, double A baseball league. But this year, there's actually a lot of prospects, and you know, it looks like good pitching has been recruited from teams. So it'll be, you know, that much more competitive from a pitching from a hitting perspective. But yeah, the ABL is just, you know, do what you can to come back with a W.
You're 30 now. You're going to be 31 in a few weeks. You're a veteran with some big league time. What is the, when you reach this point in your career, what is the day-to-day work that you put in look like? What does a guy with a decade in pro ball work on each day when he comes to the field?
Each day that I come to the field, you know, it's all about the quality reps that I put in. You know, obviously when you're younger, you know, it's quantity over quality. You know, you're trying to get as many reps as possible, but the older you get, you know, you work smarter, you know, and yeah, I'm just trying to refine my hitting. And I missed the whole of this year. I didn't get any kind of game time, so you know, I'm just playing a little bit of catch up right now. But I'll be ready to go. I've been in quarantine for the last 11 days. You know, getting my work in, getting my swings in, making sure that I'm, you know, I'm fit enough to play once quarantine is over. So, yeah, I'm just preparing myself and being ready to play.
So with that, you're still playing ball. You're going to have this, you have this winter season. What's your hope for 2021? What's your hope for the next few years of your career?
So my next few years, it's either taking one way or the other. You know, I'm either going to stay playing baseball and trying to get back into the big leagues, or you know, end up working as a coach in an academy or something like that. You know, giving back to baseball and teaching the next generation, you know, and preparing them a little bit better than, you know, the way that I was prepared. You know, giving the players, wherever I may be, an edge to the next level.
Are you hoping to coach back in your hometown, back in South Africa?
Yeah, there's got to be a few changes that has to be made in South Africa in order for me to, you know, be back over there. You know, they don't really have much money in South Africa. So, I mean, as a father now and as a husband, I've got to provide for my family. So hopefully things turn around and South Africa can develop into a competitive league. So yeah, South African baseball, you know, we have to make some adjustments in order for us to get better and be more competitive outside. You know, when we go to like the WBC qualifiers or the WBC, when we went, like it took us a little bit to make an adjustment, you know, day three in the competition, which is a little bit late. We're only making adjustments and getting better as a team, where, you know, we want to be there from the start. And if things can get better in South Africa and be more competitive against like the top 10 countries in baseball, you know, I'd be willing to coach over there. So right now I'm actually working on trying to develop baseball in Africa. So hopefully that comes through and we can start the process.
What do you hope that the next 10 years, like in 10 years, what do you hope that baseball looks like in South Africa? Do you think there's a future big league all-star in South Africa right now?
Right now, I haven't seen one yet, but also, you know, if we have the proper coaches and development style kind of academy, I think that we can, you know, have an all-star big league player one day from South Africa.
So last thing I've got for you before a rapid fire, if you could go back and talk to, you know, 18-19-year-old Gift, you know, right before you sign, right after you sign, what do you wish you would have known? What knowledge would you impart on that young guy before you embark out on your career?
I mean, talking to Gift when he was 18-19 years old, I would tell him, like, you know, making adjustments at the box and, you know, staying more relaxed and being more aggressive, you know, and you know, just things like that, that would have, you know, maybe got me in the big leagues a little bit quicker, or, you know, kept me in the big leagues, you know, making those adjustments. I wish I learned how to hit then, you know, compared to how I am now as a hitter. Like, my mentality and my confidence in the box now is totally different to when I was a kid. So I wish I had that kind of mentality, you know, when I was 18-19 years old.
I've got a couple of rapid fire questions for you, and then I'll let you get to your lunch where you're at right now. Favorite minor league ballpark?
Ooh, that's tough. That's tough. Favorite minor league ballpark would be Indianapolis. It's just a great setup. They get a lot of fans, and you know it's a big league setup in Indianapolis.
Least favorite minor league ballpark, and the complex does not count.
The least favorite, I would say, man, this is gonna take me all the way to like short season. I think Mahoney Valley was there was like you could not feel the ground ball, and there was the sand that they had in the infield was a little rough, and you know I got a few balls into my throat. So yeah.
Not ideal. Best pitcher you ever faced?
This pitcher I ever faced, it would be between Greinke and Bartolo Colon. I mean, those two move balls like it's nothing. The way they pitch and how they pitch it and how their ball moves is like, yeah, it's tough to you know, it's tough at bats out there.
This one, it might be the same answer, but best pitch you've ever faced. Has anyone ever thrown you anything where you just like could only shrug and be like, I don't know how a baseball moves like that?
Best pitch that I saw is I think it's Freeman, the lefty from the Braves. I think he was with the Braves at the time. His changeup is really good. Like he's really got a good changeup. I remember he threw it so many times, even though I was looking for it, like he's either gonna beat me with a fastball, and now I have to get ready for his fastball, and then he just drops a changeup. But then you can't really like, you know, pick it up very well, and it, you know, he just pulls a string, and it's an awesome pitch. He's got that one as a weapon for a long time.
Worst minor league bus trip.
Worst minor league bus trip is in low A Sally League, where we went from, I don't know where it was, but we went from West Virginia to the Orioles, I believe, and it was like 20 hours bus ride all the way there.
That'd be Delmarva, I believe. And where you are, where the West Virginia Power were, that is in the hills. What makes a good double play partner?
A good double play partner is you got that understanding of one another. You know, I played with a lot of guys in my career, but you know, when you have that understanding with somebody, like where they want the ball and how they want the ball, you know, makes it that much easier.
Best food city in minor league baseball.
Best food city. I don't really know. I would say Altoona Curve has got the best burgers in their stadium. Those Altoona burgers are really good.
Last thing I've got for you. What is a South African food that every American needs to try?
Every American needs to try biltong. I'll go with biltong. It's kind of like beef jerky, but it's 10 times better.
Biltong.
Yeah, biltong.
Okay, I'll put it on the list. Gift, thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm. I am very appreciative that you took the time. Best of luck this winter in Australia. Hope by the time this drops that we've got good news about how you're playing.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Of course, you take it easy.
You too. Take care.
And that's it for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm. A big thanks to Gift and Gope for taking the time. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And again, leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Get us over that 100 mark. Episodes of From Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. Next Tuesday is going to be with former Major League pitcher Bob Tewksbury talking about minor league life in the 80s, a couple stories that are very much very Bull Durham. If you get my drift, a lot of good stuff with that one. So tune in for that in 2 weeks. Also, make sure you're subscribed to baseballamerica.com for your amateur and prospect news. And we'll catch you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Sweet. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.